Tom Woods Show, episode 1414.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, the school year is winding down as I record this, and it's soon going to be time to think about next year's homeschool curriculum. Well, how about getting your mental health back and not running yourself ragged as a homeschooling parent anymore by using the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum? Your children will get a top-notch education in all the standard subjects, plus they'll learn how to start their own home business, how to be an effective public speaker, how to manage their money, the kind of topics that don't get taught anywhere. Plus, get $160 worth of free bonuses when you subscribe to the curriculum through ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Grab that handkerchief because you're going to be in tears when I tell you that, unfortunately, yes, today is the final day of Michael Malice Week. We've been talking about his brand new book, The New Right, A Journey to the Fringe of American Politics. More to discuss, and that's what we are just about to do. Michael Malice, welcome back one more time.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. If we're not moving some copies of The New Right, then I resign as the head of the Tom Woods Show enterprise over here.
Your guest host did a better job.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I watched your interview of yourself on your welcome.
God, that was, you know what the best comment was on the YouTube?
I can imagine, but what?
You can cut the sexual tension with a knife.
Oh, that is much better than anything I would have thought of.
I was dying.
Oh, man. It puts me in mind of the Seinfeld episode where he meets a Janine Garofalo character, and she's so much like him, and he's just totally smitten, and he realizes, I know what I've been waiting for all this time. Myself.
Yeah.
All right. And by the way, it was so well done. I mean, the pacing, the camera, back and forth, it seemed real. It was really well done.
Yeah, it was fun. The other good comment was someone said, boy, it must have taken him a lot of time to change his clothes after every question.
That's a good one. That was very good. These are actually worthy of you.
Yeah, I was impressed.
That's good. All right. So as people, I think, have grasped by now, much of the book is organized around personalities, generally one per chapter. And you're telling the story kind of through the stories of these personalities. And this was the way St. Martin's, which we remind people, St. Martin's is a big deal. To get published by St. Martin's, that is a big deal. St. Martin's wanted it done this way. And you were saying that you prefer to focus more on the ideas than on the personalities. But in this case, I will say the personalities are quite colorful. So it does work. But I thought in this episode, let's just, you know, we've looked at this subject from a number of different angles.
Wait,
so far.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
There was a real genius on Twitter who asks me, he goes, and the book's about the fringe of American politics, right? I talk about Mencius Moldbug, the cathedral, and he goes, does neo-reaction appear anywhere in your book? And I go, no, it's all about Milo. And he goes, oh, I guess that's, you know, too fringe for, you know, putting in a book. I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just a book about Milo.
Yeah, because that's what the world needs.
Yeah, that's my forte. Like, yeah. Milo, the unauthorized autobiography.
Yeah, exactly. All right. What I want to do was to actually explore some of the ideas because we get interesting glimpses into the mind of our narrator and guide. Because sometimes he'll take us on several pages worth of analysis, like on your cultural theory, for instance, in one of the later chapters.
Yeah.
And so we do get a glimpse inside your mind, and we get a glimpse at maybe how you think some of these figures are wrong, or they've exaggerated something, or they're completely missing the point, or whatever it is. And other times there's more sympathy. I wonder if you would, at this stage now, having completed the book and it's out, and you've taken us on this journey, can we sit back and you walk us through a few of the ideas that you think are central to this, well, I hate to say movement, but to this, whatever it is, conglomeration of people, and tell me where you think they're right and where you think they're wrong?
Oh, that's a broad question. Okay.
Well, let's do one at a time.
Pick one. I got you. One of the big questions is, what does a win condition look like? That's a video game term, right? Like at what point, you know, it could be you clear a castle or, you know, you get a sword or, you know, you kill the dragon, right? So in for these people, it's what does winning look like? And I don't think conservatives think in those terms. Like they think about beating Democrats almost like a sports team, right? Like even if you win the Super Bowl, there's going to be a Super Bowl next year. It's you know what I mean? It's almost this kind of perpetual thing. And with here, it's like, no. This is a war and there's going to be a victory and it's going to be us. And what's that going to look like? So I think that's a big question that they would all have between us. And I do have lots of conservatives that I'm friends with. And, you know, some of them, I'm not even going to mention who, but like I've DM'd with them. And this person's a prominent conservative Catholic, you know, socially conservative. And they were talking to me in DM and they're like, I had to realize these people want me dead. And I think that is the big distinction between, oh, you know, the media, they're so sloppy. And it's like, no. These people are preparing you for the gulags. So those are the two, I think, different approaches to the media being one example.
Yeah, and that is very revealing. That is very these different ways of looking at it.
And so, and you're asking me whether I agree or not. For me, I hate it when people say like, well, I don't understand how I can look at this and not think that. It's like, well, if you can't understand something, that's not saying something about the thing you can't understand. That's saying something about your brain, you know? But I will use that expression. I can't understand how people can look at the Brett Kavanaugh case. And Brett Kavanaugh is a very accomplished man, very powerful man, wealthy, smart, well-liked. And if you saw what was done to him without apology or consequences for people who went after him, I don't understand, and again, I'm using that expression I don't like, how you as a layman think you would fare better if the eye of Sauron got turned on you.
The Kavanaugh thing, yeah, that I ended up doing an episode on it with Dave Smith, and we just riffed about it. We just talked about it because I remember I was in the car, I listened to his statement, and how am I supposed to know who's right in this situation? How am I supposed to know? But I thought to myself, wow, he came out swinging. That was a really, really, that was about the best statement you could give. And he has the appropriate, if he really is innocent, it seems to me he has the appropriate level of outrage here. And then I thought, wait, what are they going to say against this statement? It was all, he doesn't have the right judicial temperament because he's angry at being called a rapist. That's not what judicial temperament's about. It's when there's a case in front of you, if you can look at it impartially. It doesn't mean if somebody comes up to you and accuses you of masterminding the Holocaust that you get angry. I mean, of course, I would want the person to get angry. I don't want an automaton.
Or if someone in your court is someone who's been proven beyond any doubt to have raped and murdered a child, for you to be Michael Dukakis in that, you know, 88 debate and be like, well, you know, given all the plus and minuses, no, you want that judge to be like, this is an atrocity, an abomination, and you are going to be put away to make sure you're never in the same room with a child again.
Right. Now,
that is perfectly appropriate judicial temperament in the face of something. And also judicial temperament would be, you know what, you sold marijuana. I'm not putting you away for the rest of your life. It means having a heart. Not being a robot.
Yeah, not being a robot. And yet, you know full well, if the shoe were on the other foot, they would be cheering his righteous indignation. You know,
well, so also, if he had been calm, they'd go, look, you know, it's guilty. Because if someone said to me that I'm a rapist in front of my kids,
right,
I'd punch him in the face.
That's exactly what I said. There was no way for him to win that. So that was a significant thing.
Tom, what you just said, this is the difference between conservatives and the new right. Do you think these people are playing fair? Do you think it's possible to win on their terms? Or do you think they will, after the fact, write the principle that will allow them to declare victory? This is the big distinction.
But yet, you'll recall, Lindsey Graham, whom I don't care for, was absolutely vicious in this, going after Kavanaugh's enemies, and just to the point where people who have not liked him for a long time, I mean, you know, Ron Paul people don't like him. You have all these people saying, my gosh, now that John McCain died, maybe the real Lindsey Graham is coming to the fore. And there was even this people have used it for memes, this photo of him walking, he's adjusting his tie with a smirk on his face. Yeah. And right behind him is a woman screaming at the top of her lungs, and he's got this smirk.
And the photo, if people want to look it up, is called The Owning of the Lib.
Is that what they called it?
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, so that you would say in there, you caught a glimpse, but only a glimpse of what you would normally look for on the new right. Because that's he's not part of that movement.
No.
But boy, he reflected that for that brief moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So it wasn't a matter of, well, he didn't handle it the way a Mitt Romney would have handled the situation, you know, because he loves, you know, he loves the U.S. Senate and he loves proper decorum and he loves respectability.
There were more organizations that you can count on the right who were like, Kavanaugh should withdraw. Remember?
They're
all saying it. And this is the big difference also, a big difference between the conservatives and you, right? Are you going to back down or are you going to double down and punch these people back twice as hard? And Trump being the greatest example of this, when they came for him, instead of apologizing, there was this great clip, people can find it. He's doing it, this is when he was a candidate, and he's doing a presser, and a journalist asks him, he goes, hey, Mr. Trump, don't you think the term anchor babies is offensive to people? And Trump goes, oh, okay, what do you want me to say instead? And the guy goes, children, American-born children of undocumented immigrants. And Trump goes, you want me to say that? He goes, no, I'm going to say anchor babies. And the guy keeps talking, goes, excuse me, I'm going to say anchor babies, and just moves on to the next question. So this premise of why are you, and I talk about, you know, often the impossibility of discourse, why are you engaging with someone when there's no upside and they're not coming at you from your framework? There's no point. So it's just like, yeah, okay, that I heard you. No, we're moving on. And another example I use in my book, Jim Acosta was in the Oval Office or adjacent to the Oval Office with the president. And this was after, you're going to have to bleep this because the Tom Woods Show is a lot cleaner place than the Oval Office, when President Trump allegedly referred to those shithole countries, right? And Jim Acosta goes, Mr. President, are you comfortable with immigrants coming from like Sweden and Norway? He's like, and Trump goes, I want them in from everywhere. And he goes, oh, but not like, you know, countries of like Africa. And Trump just goes out and just points at him. And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, I'm not racist. Blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Tom, if someone comes up to you that you never met, and let's use another example and go, you know, I'm not a rapist. You're not going to feel more comfortable around this person.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, likewise, he handled, I don't know if it was how many months ago it was, somebody was interviewing him, it was a press thing, and they asked him, they said, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called you a racist. And he says, who? And they said, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And he just said, who cares?
Who cares?
And that was his entire response.
Yeah. And he did the
hand motion. The correct response.
The dismissive
correct.
Hand motion.
Yeah. Yeah, dismissive hand motion. Totally correct, because everybody's a racist for her, so who cares?
Right.
Completely correct. If only he were so good on the substantive things I want him to be good on, you know, as he is on how to handle situations like that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Give me another thing, another issue where you can come down on one side or the other as to how the people you're chronicling are thinking.
Boy, I mean, that's a kind of a broad I mean,
well, so that's why you take it anywhere you want to. Play to your strengths.
But one of the things that you had said to me while I was producing this book is that you weren't sure how I stood on certain issues, right? So now having read it, what things that you had a question about my perspective, now are you like, oh, okay, now I know what he thinks? I think people want to hear your perspective of the book as well as me running my mouth all week.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I have to say, I understand a bit better, but I'm still unsure about exactly where you are on immigration. But I do understand your...
It's easy. There's costs and there's benefits. And it's a complicated issue. And to be blatant, it's completely... The thing of the open borders people are not being fair about, I'm not going to say fair, I hate that word, but whatever about, is to pretend that there's no cost. There's a cost. And to say that there's no benefit from immigration, I'm here. Well, I guess that's a huge cost. But so I think it just comes down in many ways to economics. And I agree that at a certain point, if you have X amount of immigrants coming into a country, it's going to have a profound change on that country. And here's a very easy example for the people who are totally open borders types. If a huge number of women from Canada, which is a culture extremely similar to our own, move to America, would that have no impact on American society? It would have an impact on birth rates. It would have an impact on life expectancy. It would have an impact on what diseases are prevalent. I mean, and the Free State Project is based on the idea that if
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
You get a small cadre of individuals and move to a population, it will have a change there. So I would be much more interested in this issue being discussed in terms of costs and benefits, because on the one hand, I agree, free migration. On the other hand, you're coming here using the state to migrate you, and you're voting yourself for more things and so on and so forth. So this is why when the state is involved and murkies the waters, it's not an unambiguous good or an unambiguous bad. So that is what I want to hear the issues about. But the issues being like, oh, if we have any immigration, America's ruined, as opposed to, well, if you're not for full open borders, you can't really call yourself a libertarian or an anarchist. Okay, that's nice. Neither of those people are interested in conversation.
I think another thing that I was helped with in this book, and I may have mentioned it earlier in the week, or I may have said it to you privately, so I don't remember. But certainly when I emailed you about the book, I said that I thought you made pretty convincing arguments against the apocalyptic tendencies of some people on the right who, for one reason or another, think that civilization is on the verge of collapse. Now, I have to admit, I'm inclined in that direction now and again. And you, in case after case, give reason to believe that things are not either as bad as they seem to some of those people, or they're not at all as they seem, or they're neglecting important contrary factors. And so, or even the analysis of freedom of speech, like this must be the worst time ever for freedom of speech. It's like people saying Barack Obama must be the worst president in American history.
Or Trump.
Stuff like that makes me crazy. Or Trump.
And I'm like, okay, how would you compare Grover Cleveland to Tyler? You don't know, so shut up.
Right, I know.
Right, you can't even name all of them. What are you talking about?
Right.
I meant you, Tom Woods.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I actually can name them all, but... I want people to leave this knowing that... Because I think the impression people have is that the only thing these people care about is race. I think that's what people think.
Yeah.
Is that true?
At one point... For the alt-right, race, the defining definite characteristic of the alt-right is they regard race as the most important or one of the most important issues. And at one point, my editor said, you know, I want this book to be about white nationalism. And I'm like, I didn't even bother responding. I'm like, this is, if you want to read about white nationalism, there's more sources than you can count. I don't think I could make it particularly interesting. I think the arguments are there. And if you want to read the arguments, go ahead. I'm sure they won't be in the show notes page. But I wanted this book to be the kind of thing where even Tom Woods, who is extremely well steeped in politics and American history, could learn a thing or two and be entertained.
Yeah, it's true. And I did make brief mention at one time, either in this one or the last one, my memory is so terrible. But for example, your stuff about how culture works is interesting, and how it develops and where it comes from and what the sources are, building on Camille Paglia and Thaddeus Russell. And I remember again in private conversation, your interest in pursuing this topic further.
Yes.
Because you find it so interesting that the right complains that it's not really driving the culture. They feel like people who despise them are driving the culture. But that's a problem. I mean, why do they not really have a cultural voice? It's almost as if they don't understand how it works, or they don't understand the dynamics of it or something. But you've got a good discussion about that later in the book. And I know we've talked about it before, but can you say a few words about that and then link it up to why should this matter to the new right? Why do they need to understand culture in terms of Michael Malice's analysis?
Sure. So Andrew Breitbart was the one who basically had the idea that politics is downstream from culture, right? Or culture is upstream from politics. I think I've seen it written either way. And I think most people listening to the show have come to the realization that Washington is the end game. And, you know, things like the universities, the media are very, very important and precede it. That's where the battles of ideas are fought, and Washington is where they're implemented. And if you've lost it where they're fought, at that point, you're just arguing over what the trimmings in the House look like. And that is why that basically is what happens in Washington, even when people like the Tea Party group come in, or the 94 group with the Gingrich Congress. So it's kind of like conservatives see that liberals are driving this car and they realize, you know what? We're not going to get to our goal unless we're driving a car as well. But it's like they have no idea how that car got built or how cars get built in general or how that liberal happened to get that particular car. And when I speak to conservatives about this, they do realize it's something that they never realize that they don't realize. And then once you point it out, they're like, oh, this is actually a very big problem. So I am starting in this book to kind of solve that issue. But this, I think, is the big issue for the right wing to face. Where does culture come from? And how is it the left has managed to dominate it so thoroughly and pervasively for so long?
I mean, that really is a great question. And you've done a pretty good job of tackling it. But I think the way they look at it today is, well, the problem is just that we're shut out of the traditional channels. We can't get a foothold in the traditional channels of culture because they're dominated by people who hate us. Okay, but then the question becomes, well, then how did that happen?
Right. How did those people get in that position to who hate you, to be in that position?
Yeah. And usually there's like no answer at all because whatever they did, you could have done.
Especially if you're smarter and have truth on your side.
Right, which you're supposed to. So what the heck, you know? All right, Michael, as we actually start to wrap up Michael Malice Week here, we got five-ish minutes still to go. I'm going to actually turn everything over to you. This is your show for the next 5 minutes to say or do whatever you want.
Okay, so one of the questions I put forth on Twitter, and Tom, you're an author. You've written literally a dozen books. It's not an expression. You've written a dozen.
Yep.
As an author, you never know how a book's going to be perceived or what's going to stand out to people, or they're going to perceive something as a joke that you didn't realize or forgot that you put in there. So I want to know, what were your biggest takeaways? And I'm going to ask three takeaways, right? A line that stuck with you, a funny thing that stuck with you, and a concept that stuck with you.
Okay, the line, because I actually underlined it.
Oh.
It was one that we actually referred to in an earlier episode, the one on democracy, is that something like...
Those who need leaders are not qualified to choose them?
To choose them, yeah.
Yes.
Because that, I mean, that actually could be a line, not that I favor essay contests, but man, to have somebody elaborate on that in an essay,
yeah,
that actually would be a good topic for an essay contest. So I think that's a great line. The thing that made me laugh, even though as I read it, I realized that I actually had heard the story before, but yet I laughed at it anyway, was the story about the glitter in your kitchen.
why are you triggering me, Tom? Why? Oh, gosh. For those who don't know, it takes a lot for me to lose my cool. I've screamed, I think, twice in the last, like, let's say 10 years. Someone at my New Year's party asked me, hey, would it be cool if I threw glitter when the ball drops? And I looked at her and I said, no. And she goes, what would you do if I did it? And I go, punch you in the face. And she walked off because I was reminded of this video by the band The Go-Go's. And during the video for the song, The Whole World Lost Its Head. And during the bridge in the video, they were just standing there and glitter was thrown at them. And I read an interview with them and they said, we're still finding it in our private parts. Like, we will never not have glitter inside of us, right? So at midnight, she glitter bombed my kitchen and I lost my mind and I'm still finding it.
Yeah. And so you have a funny line in there about how long it's going to be that you're still finding glitter in your house.
I couldn't even believe it.
So, all right. So I really enjoyed that. And then, I mean, there are a number of, I mean, your stuff on culture, I was kind of familiar with, but still to see it spelled out was helpful. But I think the chapter on democracy, I thought was particularly satisfying because I've heard critiques of democracy and I by and large agree with them, but they always make me feel a little bit uncomfortable because I know what people are going to say as soon as I utter them. Well, what do you prefer, wise guy? And I'll say, oh, well, I prefer a system where private institutions provide defense services. And they'll say, oh, okay, I think democracy. You know, so I mean, it'd just be impossible to convey that to anybody. But so in other words, I went in there kind of knowing most of the arguments, but not really feeling like any of them were really home runs. And I felt like and I think it helped that it didn't take you that many pages, that I felt like you really very effectively and persuasively summarized why this is, again, not a case of something that could just use a little bit of reform, or maybe if we change the Electoral College around a little bit, it might work better or some. You're showing that inherently this is going to lead to atrocious outcomes, and it has to. And it's not going to lead to the popular will being affected. It's going to lead to the establishment of another kind of oligarchy, that it is, you still are left with the brute fact that some people rule and other people are ruled.
Yes.
And the mechanism of democracy is meant to obscure this so that people will just learn what they're told in third grade about how their society works, and you just hope they stick with that view, and most of them do. And so I thought the authors you brought in were well chosen, and the ideas were persuasive. When you're dealing with one of the, I mean, that and public schools are about the two most sacred things we have in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't get me started on those.
Yeah. That's another thing.
I'll just leave the public. I don't think this line is in the book. It's not in the book. But if you guys use this line, make sure to credit me also. And I'm not using these words lightly. Public schools are literal prisons for children, and the only place many people will ever experience the threat of violence in their lifetime.
Yeah, it's true.
And people are like, what do you mean literal? No. I mean literal.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, approximately half the problem with public schools is it's not just that the stuff they're teaching or the teachers or whatever, the facilities. Half the time, to be perfectly blunt, it's the other kids that you're imprisoned with.
The whole point of freedom is that being someone who's for peace, both politically and interpersonally, is if you and I are having a big dispute, and even if it's getting to the point where it might get violent, that I need and you need to have the freedom to walk away peacefully. Maybe I'm humiliated because I'm not being I'd let this guy talk to me a certain way, whatever, but that's still preferable to escalating into violence. And when school, even in a job, you can quit. School's one of the very few places, and you're a child, where it's escalating and escalating. You cannot vacate. You do not have the flight option. And you know what else they tell the kids? And this isn't just in public schools. One of the most atrocious things. It doesn't matter who started it.
Yeah, what a crazy thing to say.
And kids know, 3, 4, you're a dad. They'll go up to parents and be like, oh, this person hit me. It doesn't matter who started it. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's how life works.
And it's horrifying that the children have this understanding that this is a line you can't cross. You don't lay your hands on someone. And they go up to this authority figure, whether biological or state, and they're told, no, it doesn't matter. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. And well, my favorite thing now is how they're cracking down on bullying. And the anti-bullying policy consists of hanging a poster in the main office that says, we don't tolerate bullying here. And they got that poster right on up there. And that's the policy. And that's it. it's the poster. And you go in there and you say, I've been bullied. And they say, that is a terrible shame. And that's about it. I've seen it.
And I think you're a little bit outdated here. Here's why. That anti-bullying campaign was a thing maybe like 10 years ago. And as I discuss in my book, as soon as the people who are traditionally bullied, meaning the nerds, who play video games, action figures, comic books, Gamergate, when the video gamers turned on the evangelical left, they were all portrayed as school shooters in training and as white supremacists, and that these kids need to be put in their place. So even that has gone out the window as soon as someone refused to take a knee before the altar of progressivism.
All right, I am going to let you have the last word, which seems appropriate for Michael Malice Week here, and give us your elevator pitch. Why should people read The New Right? What are they going to learn that's valuable that'll help them understand the world better? Why is the world a better place if people read this? Well, screw the world. Why are people better off if they read it?
I got some really good jokes in there. And if after a week of listening to us talk, you're not interested in the book, it's not for you. Go have a nice dinner and live your life. And I wish you nothing but the best. Not every book's for everyone.
Well, your aside about Vince Foster. I don't want to ruin it, right? I don't want to give away one of the jokes, but I just love the way you throw that in there and then you carry on. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect. It's filled with stuff like that. You know, you're reading along and you never know when the next one of those is going to pop up.
That is what I did enjoy that. Like, I'll be serious, and just throw in some one-liner, like to draw the person, and then they're back to seriousness. Yeah. That's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. So very well done. Check out The New Right, A Journey to the Fringe of American Politics, linked at tomwoods.com/1414. And folks, we will see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.